On this episode of the Ugly Truth About Business podcast, I have an incredible session with Cynthia Matheny. As a certified master behavior analyst, Cynthia has been working directly with entrepreneurs, business owners, and sales professionals to transform their businesses since 2010. Prior to understanding and valuing people for how they're wired differently, Cynthia found herself frustrated, annoyed, and judgmental of others who didn't think, act, or respond the same way she did. After her profound realization that not everyone thinks like I do, her perspective shifted and she unlocked an insatiable desire to learn more about how to value people for the way they're naturally wired, rather than just judging them for being different. Cynthia's mission is to help leaders and entrepreneurs conquer their challenges, empower their people, and create lasting impact through understanding the power of personality and perspective. Enjoy.
Get ready.
Ready.
All right. For your wake-up call.
Wake up!
He promises to tell you the truth, the whole truth, and the ugly truth. It's your life and business strategist, Steve Harris.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Ugly Truth About Business podcast. And I'm super stoked to have a really, really incredible guest on the show today. And we're having Cynthia Matheny. I hope I got that right, Cynthia.
It's actually Matheny, but you're not the first person who's mispronounced it.
There we go. So forgive me. So Cynthia Matheny, and she is a DISC DISC certified, because I feel like you do so much more than that. But, you know, let's just get right into it. So it's nice to meet you, Cynthia.
Thank you for having
tell
me.
Us a little bit about yourself and how your journey started.
Yeah, so it's a great story. I'll attempt to keep it short. I started selling real estate at the end of 2009 and learned to use the DISC assessment in the hiring process to help identify the best fit for the way someone behaves. Mm-hmm. And it's a personality assessment, or I prefer to call it a behavioral assessment. And DISC measures how you do things. It measures what you do, how you show up. And so I did what I call failed forward at a really high level. I hired people wrong. I fired a lot of people. And then I met someone on the bus at one of my conventions who used the DISC assessment to help me learn more about how to communicate differently with other right. people. And it literally changed my life. And so eventually I created a course called DISC Unlocked. And I was still selling real estate. I was a top producer in my region at the time. Mm-hmm. And I created a course so I could share with other people what I had learned, because it had such a significant impact on my life. So at the time I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I started teaching that course all around North and South Carolina. And pretty soon I started teaching it nationally. So I moved to Boise, Idaho almost 4 years ago and okay. decided that I just wasn't as passionate about real estate anymore, and decided to retire from real estate and focus full time on my business coaching and my training. And then COVID happened, which was actually right. a blessing in disguise for me, because it allowed me to take some time and break my 1 6-hour course into 4 smaller courses. Mm-hmm. And so I started teaching the shorter courses via Zoom. And now that we're back to in-person, I teach both in-person and via Zoom. And it's, I was just telling you earlier, I taught earlier today, and people right. just have such a high degree of energy. That I'm very blessed and fortunate to be able to do something and earn a living and have it be something that I'm super passionate about and enjoy.
You know, I think that that's the most important thing, being able to do something you love and enjoy. And, you know, like you mentioned, even though you were doing really, really great as a real estate, you know, expert, and then pivoting to becoming a business coach, I've done a bit of research on DISC. You know, I've taken the assessment several times myself. I've gone from being steady to dominant, and I vacillate between, you know, in between. But I wanted to ask you, do you think someone's personality can determine the level of success they have?
I am a firm believer in that your personality does not dictate how successful you can be.
Okay.
Now, within that, there are things that we need to take into consideration. And one of the things that, one of the reasons why it's a great idea to use the DISC in the hiring process, because if I'm looking for someone for a role that needs a high attention to detail and is able to do analytical analyzation, run the numbers,
right.
basically sit behind a computer and make sure that everything is compliant, I don't want to hire someone like me because details are not my thing. That's the opposite of me. So in real estate, for example, I teach us my primary audience is in real estate.
Right.
And most successful salespeople in any area of sales, most successful agents lead with or have stronger tendencies in the I categories because mm-hmm. they're driven, goal oriented, people oriented, behavioral styles. So they're a natural fit for sales.
Right.
However, I've coached several agents who lead with their S and their C, who are the more calm, compliant, steady, and stable, which is not the typical behavioral style that's conducive to being top sales, but it doesn't mean you can't do it. So I'm a firm believer in that your personality style or your behavioral style does not dictate who you are. It simply is how you're wired and what you do with that and how open and self-aware you become to how the way you're naturally wired moves you forward and holds you back. That's what's going to dictate your success.
Right. And it's possible to change your personality as you go along, because I noticed that sometimes you can have an adaptive scenario where you switch. And then when you are in your, you know, in your comfort zone, you get back to a particular thing. So is that some sort of being some sort of like chameleon, just vacillating between personalities? What do you think?
So there's a whole bunch wrapped up in there, right? Like the first question is, can my disc change? And there's a lot of controversy out there, but the reality is, yes, it can. And our environment has a significant impact on how we show up. So depending on your environment, an environment can be your home life. You could be in an abusive home life and that can dictate how you show up. Mm-hmm. You know, what country you live in is indicative of your environment. So your environment can have a huge impact. And then as far as vacillating back and forth, there's a couple of things there. One of the things I teach people is how to adapt their behavioral style. And it's not changing who you are. It's simply identifying, let's say you're communicating with someone. Well, if wired differently than you and you communicate with them the same way you want to be communicated with, you're not going to have as tight of a connection.
Right.
Yet
right.
If I realize, let's just say that you're wired with your S and your C, then I know that I'm going to probably need to slow down my pace. If I'm selling to you, I'm going to need to make sure that I'm prepared with lots of details. Mm-hmm. So I'm adapting how I behave temporarily, but I'm not changing who I am. And then as far as the chameleon, there are some behavioral styles that tend to be more chameleon-like.
Right.
Like they don't necessarily stand out in any one quadrant really strong. And those people, it tends to take them less energy to adapt to the style of someone else based on the outcome that they want to achieve. So what I primarily teach on is communication and sales. And so it can be super effective, especially in the sales arena, to temporarily adapt your behavior once you've identified what the behavioral style is of the other person.
Right. I think that's great. But we're going to backtrack just a little bit, if you don't mind, because you and I just went straight into it because, you know, we both know about this. But to people who perhaps are listening to the podcast and may not necessarily be sure or know what that's about, can you just walk us back to what the DISC assessment is about, the different personality styles and how they can determine what their style is?
Yes. So it's D, I, S, and C, and each of the letters stand for one of the four quadrants of behavior. So the D stands for dominance. The I is influence. The S is steadiness. And the C is compliance. And so there, William Marston was the original person who started to study people and identify these four different quadrants of behavior. So the D is the dominant driver, very goal-oriented, fast-paced. The I is the social interactive person, the influencer who gets their energy from being around people. They tend to be very optimistic, they're easily affected, and have a hard time following through to completion. The S is the steady, stable, people-oriented people, but they're less comfortable with people they don't know and more comfortable with people they do know. They are this supportive network of people. They want to help you succeed. They don't necessarily want to be in the limelight, and they oftentimes put others above themselves to a detriment in some cases. Right. Mm-hmm. The C style is the compliant, analytical, very black and white, right and wrong, They're the detail oriented that are going to make sure that you're in compliance, or they're definitely going to comply. They're going to follow the rules. They tend to be more quiet, more introspective or introverted, which seems to be a dirty word these days, and it's not.
Yeah.
And so we're made up of all four of these different four quadrants, just in varying degrees. And most people can resonate more strongly with two of the four behavioral styles.
Right.
And so like me, for example, my primary styles are D and I. So I'm fast paced, people oriented, and very low S and very low C.
Right. I think it's the same for me. Many, many years ago, I think I was an S and an I. But now I think I'm a D and an I, you know what I mean? So I recognize that it's over time I've adapted or evolved into, you know, into this personality. But, you know, I was thinking, right, you know, they say communication is a two-way street, and you got to be able to communicate, not necessarily in the language you hear, but in the language you speak. So if you spoke German and I spoke French, we won't be able to understand each other.
Exactly.
So, and there's always this conflict of personality where a D is driven, goal-oriented, got to get it done. And the C just wants all the facts and figures and is like, you know what, listen, I got to get my ducks in a row. How do we manage that contradiction when it comes to communicating?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, which is primarily what I teach is, how do I identify what you're looking for in other people to identify how they're naturally wired? And even if it's not a two-way understanding, you know, even if you're the only one that has the education around DISC, I teach the platinum rule versus the golden rule. So the golden rule is treat others the way you want to be treated. And I'm like, no, you don't want to communicate and sell to and present to people the way they or the way you want to be presented and communicated with. Mm-hmm. It's all about what they want.
They want, yeah.
So knowing what to look for and identifying, you know, what to listen for. You know, in sales, a lot of your first interaction is over the phone. So it's pace and speed and voice inflection. Mm-hmm. So really clearly understanding how to identify the behavioral style. And then once you're able to do that, when you're equipped with the knowledge of, all right, so if you lead with your D and your I, you and I are probably going to have no problem communicating.
Right.
But if, again, if you led with your S and your C, because of my knowledge of myself and of others, I realize I need to slow down. Mm-hmm. I need to give more detail because I naturally am fast paced, expect people to read my mind. Mm-hmm. So it's valuing the relationship enough to know that I'm responsible to adapt to your style, especially if you don't have education or the knowledge around DISC. So it's really thinking more about you and less about me.
Right. I think that's great. Let's come a little closer to the work that you do with teams and organizations and everything. And I think one of the great things about leadership and management is putting the right people in the right places.
Yes.
Now, with all these personalities, you know, we've got the dominance, influence, steady and compliant. How do you take an organization, and, you know, you don't have to go too much in detail because it's proprietary work to who you are, but how do you identify who goes where and who leads what? Because, for example, the CEO or the decision maker may not necessarily be the right personality. I don't know if that happens to lead the organization. It might be someone else who should be driving. So how do you do that?
So I call that being in the right seat on the bus.
Exactly.
Because the behavioral style, like I mentioned before, it doesn't determine who you are. It just determines how you show up. Well, there are lots of other factors in how you are wired. You know, your degree of go-givenness. You know, the high D is known for that, but it's not just about that. There's just so much more that plays into your success or lack thereof. But as far as being in the right seat on the bus, it starts, in my opinion, with the hiring, knowing what the job duties or the job description and what types of things are going to be required, and then filter that, you know, through, is this position going to be more people oriented? Do they need to be on the phone? Do they need to be interacting with people?
Right.
Or is it more analytical and supportive role? So it's really looking at the role and then identifying the appropriate behavioral style for that role. And if you currently have someone in the wrong role, they're probably not loving it because they probably aren't naturally wired. And so they're probably not doing it really well. But that doesn't mean that they might not be fantastic fantastic at a different role within the organization. So it's a matter of just having a conversation. And I'm a huge fan of asking questions, saying, are you happy in this role? Like, does this bring you joy? And if they're screwing up, the answer is going to be no. But depending on those other factors, you know, what their values are, if they're a fit for the culture, then you just think about, okay, what other role might they be better suited for? And then you just move them to an area where they would thrive.
But do you think that most organizations figure that that's expensive? So, you know, they have somebody in the seat in the bus, but that person isn't the right fit. But moving them around to perhaps where they naturally fit might be too expensive in their minds to do that. So I guess I'm asking, why don't organizations do this at the very beginning? You know what I mean? Because I think what happens is we just look at your qualifications and that's it. But the role of your behavior determines what's going to happen in the organization's bottom line. So what do you think about that?
Well, it's interesting that you said, you know, they're thinking that it's too expensive in their mind.
Right.
What they're not realizing is the actual expense of a bad hire or just having somebody in the wrong role. The cost of that is far more significant down the line when they're screwing up. They may be, you know, infecting culture. That is the reason why more people don't do it in the beginning. I think it's simply because they're unaware of the power of it. Because, you know, if you think about it, well, it costs anywhere from, you know, $65 to $150 to give an employee an assessment. Well, you can look at that as an expense or you can look at it as an investment and really try to ward off future problems right from the very beginning. So to answer your question, I think it's lack of understanding and knowledge behind the actual tool and how they can effectively use it. Because any organization that uses it in the hiring process is going to have less turnover. It's just factual.
Yeah, that's math. That's true. So let's get into a subject that I really love just as much as I do, you know, DISC. And you are phenomenal at that. And that is helping people optimize their potential, helping people to, I don't want to use the word, you know, live their best life, because I know it's a little played out, but a little cliche, but helping people just optimize themselves. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So I love that topic. I'm glad you are also passionate about that. You know, I'm a huge fan of determine the outcome you want life in a conversation in whatever it is, and then figure out what action steps do I need to take to achieve that. And so I'm a big fan of deciding, you know, a great question you can ask yourself or someone else if you're coaching them is what lights you up inside? So I had a coach several years ago that asked me, what lights you up inside? And I had to take some time to really think about it. And it's really why I do what I do today, because my answer to her was, it's when someone shares with me something that I taught them or something that I shared with them had a positive impact in their life. Like that's what really lit me up inside. And so lo and behold, what do I do now? I teach people and that lights me up inside.
Absolutely.
I had another thought. Ask me the question again, because I had another thought and I don't remember.
No, I was talking about, you know, how do we optimize our potential?
Optimize. Yes. So self-awareness and ownership are two keys. So I am self-aware of around how I'm naturally wired and how that holds me back and how that propels me forward. And a lot of people spend time focusing on their weaknesses and getting better. And I disagree with that approach. I think you identify what are you really fantastic at and how can you invest that into whatever profession you are doing. And then I do what I call, I leverage out those pieces that I'm not super good at. So like I have an assistant that does all of the scheduling and all of the updating of the handouts, making sure that all of the details are taken care of. Because when left up to me, it's like inevitable for me to screw up.
Right.
So it's rather than focusing on your weaknesses, focus on what you're good at and find ways to leverage those other things to other people who are really good in those areas.
Yeah. You know, you talked about being self-aware, and I think that's great because people just might say, well, you know, I'm great at this and I'm bad at this. You know, I can't be bothered with about what I'm bad at. Let me just focus on what I'm great at. But like you said, it's about leveraging your weaknesses while you focus on your strengths, because I've seen people just make excuses and say, you know, look, heck it, I'm not great at that, so I'm not even going to try. But I right. think what you're saying is being able to make that balance up, that even though you may seem to fall short in a particular area, you're self-aware yeah. to say, I need to be able to leverage this weakness because it'll ultimately pull down my strengths. I think that's what you're also saying.
Exactly. As well as, like, there are some areas, like, I'm easily distracted, right? Like, I can't leverage that out. Like, I can't leverage focus to someone else. But because I'm aware of that and how significantly it impacts me, I do what I call create systems to save myself from myself. Mm-hmm. So it's turning my phone on do not disturb, making sure that the door is closed. When I was in an actual office building, I focused my desk to where I couldn't see the door, because even just having people walk by. And again, it's that self-awareness and knowing what maybe causes you to become distracted or less productive, then create a system that's going to give you the biggest benefit to be able to succeed, even if you're easily distracted, or even if you do have a hard time focusing for a long period of time.
True. One of the things that I really love where it comes to human optimization, and you know, you've talked about that as well, just finding what you're great at. You know, I always tell people that, you know, fish don't fly and birds don't go, you know, birds don't take swimming lessons.
Right.
You know what I mean? Birds don't take swimming lessons and fish don't go to flight school. Right. There's something that you've discovered that's inside of you that, you know, birds never take a flying lesson, but that's their natural habitat. Yes. Fish don't, you know, I know they call it a school of fish, but fish don't take swimming lessons at all. Yeah. So it's about finding your zone, finding your bliss. But why do you think that a lot of people, you know, you both of us are in the line of teaching and education and entrepreneurship, and sometimes, you know, people who may not necessarily do what we do or follow what, you know, what we do may think that that's just being very cliche, like, yeah, right, follow your passion, you know. Why do you think people just don't take it seriously, and B, just don't do anything about it?
I think there's a couple of things. One of the primary things is their lack of exposure to what could be. I mean, even myself, when I look back before I got into real estate, you know, I joined Keller Williams, and at the time, well, and still now, they're very training focused.
Right.
I had no idea the potential that I had based on how I was wired. I didn't know how to think that way. So I learned how to reframe my thinking because I was exposed to it. It didn't mean that I wasn't capable before. I had simply never been exposed to the possibility through personal development. So not being exposed to it. And those people who are exposed to it and really just don't want to buy into it, it's really just a matter of limited mindset. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everybody is going to say, oh, I realize if I think about things differently, then I'll show up differently and my outcomes will be different. And so limited thinking and lack of exposure, I would say, are the two primary reasons why people don't jump out and really attempt to be all they can be. I call it maximizing your human potential.
Right. So in the journey of maximizing your human potential, optimizing yourself, and trying to max out who you are, don't we run the risk of comparing ourselves to somebody else? You know, because yes, I know that you're on your path and I'm on my path and we're both running a race, but don't you think we run the risk of looking at somebody else, you are in a side view, and we're like, this person is just so maxed out, and it makes me feel so insecure about myself, right? How do you handle that on this journey of optimizing yourself?
So I think that everybody who lives and breathes is at risk for comparing themselves to others, whether you're a successful entrepreneur or you're a stay-at-home. We all naturally compare ourselves to other people. Mm-hmm. I think it comes down to how you define and how you measure your success. And this is something that, you know, I've had to be super intentional upon, because I measure my success based on how I've improved over yesterday. Like, better is my bearing is my definition of success. You know, for some people, it's the amount of money you have in the bank, and that's not wrong. Right. It's just one form of measurement of success. And so my coach has actually worked with me a great deal on this. and not looking at myself and determining my value based on how well they did, but looking inward and seeing how much better am I now than I was before.
I think that's fantastic, because sometimes we set those long distance goals that we never really seem to just catch up with. And, you know, and the slow pace that we seem to be making just, you know, destabilizes us and just makes us feel bad that we're not really catching up. But what I'm hearing you say is just measuring yourself based on yesterday and then looking forward to tomorrow. I was at a meeting with some gentlemen in a Bible study group that, you know, I've started attending. And one of the gentlemen was sharing how, you know, he'd had challenges with, you know, alcohol abuse, and he's been sober for 23 years. Nice. And it's going to be 24 years in April. And somebody asked the question, how have you, you know, been able to stay sober this long? And he says, all I do is focus on today.
One day at a time.
He said, you know, he said to me, and I thought that was really profound. He says, I go to bed by 10:30. And at the time we were having this meeting, it was like 8 p.m. And he says, I have 2 hours, guys. 2 hours from now, I will go to bed, and then the clock is going to reset again tomorrow. I don't look at tomorrow. I look at today. And I think that that's something that is really, really powerful, that we should give ourselves grace for and not beat ourselves up in comparison to all the things that we should have done, as opposed to the things that we're doing today. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned about goals and like setting a long-term goal and then maybe not ever reaching it, which reminds me of one of the books that I read that I really had an impactful aha, and it's called Atomic Habits.
Yeah, great book.
So it's the difference between outcome goals and process goals. So the outcome goal is, I want to lose 50 pounds by January 1st, right? Well, that's the outcome. So you get to celebrate that win one time only with that outcome goal. But when you look at the process goals are what are the little steps that need to be taken in order to achieve that outcome goal. It's maybe it's drinking, you know, 40 ounces of water a day. Some people track their calories. Other people, you know, eat low carbs. So whatever that form of measurement is, you can have a win every single day.
Absolutely.
When you focus on the process goals, then that momentum of all of those little wins eventually will help get you to the outcome goal. But unfortunately, so many people only focus on the outcome goal, and then they get frustrated when they're a week or two in and they're not maybe seeing the progress that they've had. But if they're tracking their process goals, and they can see, hey, I might not be seeing the big results, but I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing every single day.
I think that's fantastic. Just process goals and outcome goals. And like you said, the outcome goal, you celebrate it only once, but the process goal, you know, you just keep getting small wins and small wins daily. You know,
Once you achieve your outcome goal, the process goals
still continue.
Right? Otherwise you're going to go right back to where you were, but now you've built a habit of all your process goals. So it continues to where you don't backtrack.
I love it. Let me just touch one more time, just on the goals thing, since we're there, and still going back to this just for a second. One of the assessments that I'd read a couple of years ago, they were talking about, you know, how everyone responds to a goal. So for example, the dominant individual is more like ready, fire, and then aim. Shoots first and then ask questions later, right? And then the, you know, maybe the compliant guy is more like aim, probably.
Actually, they're like ready.
Absolutely. So let's just touch that since you're already on the subject. So how do each of those personalities respond to goals? Because, you know, there's somebody who's listening and they're saying, man, I just can't, you know, I'm suffering from this perfection complex. I just can't seem to move. You know, how do they respond? What can they do about it?
So that's a great question. And again, it goes back to being willing to be vulnerable with yourself and self-aware. So the D style really is the aim, fire, ready, or fire, aim, ready. You know, they're just like going out there and just doing it and not necessarily preparing ahead of time, which can be great in many regards, because then they're learning as they are failing, right? They're failing forward. And then the C style and the S style, they are both more of the ready. Mm-hmm. And they get ready to get ready, and then they never take that action. So they actually don't succeed as much as the high D, because they're too afraid to take the risk of making a mistake. whereas the high D and kind of the high I tend to be more of the fire ready aim. So with the self-awareness around that, I think accountability is huge. Yeah. If you know that you tend to be a prepper and you don't ever take action, then involve somebody else. Figure out what works best for you and holding yourself accountable to achieving your goals. And that's kind of individual. And personality style, I think, maybe plays into that a little bit. Uh-huh. I need a high degree of accountability for multiple reasons. And the primary reason is because when I set a goal, I aim to achieve it. Right, and I know that when I have somebody that I have to be accountable to, it helps me show up better version of myself, because I don't want to let myself down, but I also don't want to let them down.
Right. I mean, we're having great conversations, Cynthia. And I know that, you know, everyone who's listening to the podcast is like, look, you know, give me some more. But before we give them some more, I wanted to ask you, right, you know, again, the title of the podcast is The Ugly Truth About Business. Now, you've been an entrepreneur for a while. You've been doing very, very amazing things. What are some of the ugly truths about business that no one ever told you that you just had to find out by yourself? And you're like, OMG, I can't believe no one told me this.
I love that. And sometimes even when people do tell you, you don't listen. So one thing as an entrepreneur, a lot of people become an entrepreneur because they want control of their own schedule, right? Like, right. Hey, I have freedom and flexibility. Well, freedom and flexibility can have a negative impact if you're not accountable to the actions that you need to actually take, right?
Absolutely.
So not having a boss can be great, but it can also be a drawback if you're not willing to actually treat it like you have a job. Like, you wake up every day and you work. Depending on the hours that you've set, you're actually being productive during those hour times. So it can be a myth that the entrepreneurs have freedom, because really what happens is the consistency of the actions that you take, that's what creates the freedom. Like, the freedom is not there in general. It's the consistency in your actions that need to be taken. So one, being your own boss is not all it's cracked up to be. Would be one thing. Another thing would be too, and this is something that I've experienced, especially since COVID, is based on how you're wired. Like, I'm a solopreneur. It's me and my remote assistant.
Right.
And that's difficult for me because I thrive in an environment with people. And I also am passionate about growing together.
Right.
And so that's been an eye opener for me, that sometimes being a solopreneur can be lonely.
True.
And an entrepreneur, depending on the number of people that you have. But so for me, it's important. And so I'm aware of that. So I make sure that I have masterminds with different people. So I lead a couple of different groups. I'm a part of a couple of different groups. So I know that I'm not in it alone.
Right.
So being aware enough, again, to know what do you need in order to be successful, because success doesn't come to people the same way. It's different for everyone.
I love it. One of the things that you said that, you know, resonated so deeply with me was, you know, the freedom doesn't come that way. It's the consistency of the actions that you take that determine your freedom. So if you're not consistent, you'll be incarcerated by the job, by the business that you're building. You know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs who have moved from employment have traded a 9-to-5 for a 24/7. And there's no time off for good. There's no time off for good behavior. You are just there. And the only thing that really gives you that time off, like you're saying, is the consistency of the actions that you take that slowly but surely build a system that you can leverage that just frees your time and just frees you to do the things that you love.
I totally agree. I've never heard that phrase like that, but I love that. You trade a 9-to-5 for a 24/7. So
absolutely.
True.
Absolutely. Yeah. No breaks, no time off, nothing.
Yep.
So this has been amazing, Cynthia. This has really been amazing. And I know a lot of people just want to connect with you. Do you have any products, any masterminds that people can, you know, sign up for? Where can we find you? Where can we connect with you?
So the best way to connect with me is through my website, cynthiamatheny.com. There's places on there you can reach out for me. It's ever evolving and changing. Like, I've just started a membership program where people can come and have unlimited access to all of the training that I've digitally recorded. So I'm in the process of getting that all put together now. Like, today that's not on my website. Next week it probably will be.
Right.
So it's kind of an ever changing thing, but I encourage people, you know, I tell people when I'm teaching my courses, reach out to me. Like, I will make time for anybody who reaches out for me.
Right.
It might not be that day. It might not be that week, depending on my schedule, mm-hmm. but I'm happy to have a conversation about, you know, what does it look like for you to grow in this area or that area? And, you know, am I a good person or a good fit to help you with that? So I would say, just reach out. Let's have a conversation.
You heard it, guys. Just reach out and have a conversation. Cynthia Matheny. I got it right this time. Cynthia Matheny. So that's CynthiaMatheny.com, right? Are you on, you know, socials, Instagram, Facebook?
Yeah, Instagram, I'm not as active. It's Mindset Maverick is my Instagram name. I haven't hired anybody to do anything. So there, you're just going to see a lot of pictures of me outdoors and quotes. Facebook, still kind of getting my act together there. My profile is public. So if you just want to learn more about me and what I love and what I do, you know, Cynthia Matheny, Facebook. I have a group, but again, that's really in the beginning stages. Right. I've just hired somebody to help me get that going.
Hey,
I'm on LinkedIn too.
That's awesome. You know, I think for me, it's the other way around. I'm more active on Instagram and totally, absolutely nothing on Facebook. Yeah, but I also have my website. So yeah, but it works. And, you know, thanks for doing this. You know, thank you for being a part of the Ugly Truth About Business podcast. And I will share it with you. You can share it with your community. You know, we'll promote it and post it and, you know, get my audience to just, you know, connect with you, as I'm sure they will. This has been amazing.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Thanks for being here.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the Ugly Truth About Business podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Please take a moment to subscribe, share it with a friend, and most importantly, leave a review and let people know that this is the podcast that they should be listening to on the internet. Thank you.